Chapter 30. His Dark Cults Arising. As a girl, Renski had grown up on an agri-farm on a border world within the Sol system. A decent way of life, better than most. Her father had raised steers, fine, well-nourished bovids, destined for the bellies of the Emperor's crusading armies. He took pride in his stock, and fed and cared for them well. He loved his daughter, too, especially since his wife had died of lung pox, and left the two of them alone. Barely an adolescent, Renski had tended the herd, lending a hand after her mother could not. She had been in the grazing pens when a slythig had found a way through the refraction field. It feasted well on the good meat, raising a panic in the bovids. Renski recognized the stampede for what it was too late. She became trapped in the pens, unable to escape. Her only hope was to wade into the herd and find the slythig, choking on animal sweat and her own terror of being crushed or stung. She killed it, of course, an electro-pike to its chitinous thorax, but her aspirations to be an agri-farmer ended that day. The memory of it never left her, though. It returned now with interest. Renski, wading through the herd again, looking for a slythig. She eyed the faces of the crowd with wary suspicion, glad she did so through her visor. That way they wouldn't see her fear.
"One step to the thorax and it's over," she muttered.
"Proctor?"
"Nothing,"
said Renski. The wreck of Nada's Valkyrie was ahead. It had crashed a few hundred paces from the wall. The pilot had managed to bring it down on its belly. Renski considered whether the intention of the saboteurs had actually been to hit the wall. People scattered as the intercession squad approached, too timid to keep up their looting and shouting in the face of shock mauls and combat shotguns. They didn't go far, however, lurking at the periphery of the wrecked gunship, hungry and fearful. Only at a distance did the belligerence continue. The Valkyrie's two door gunners were gone, flung loose during the crash or taken. Renski hoped it wasn't the latter, and eyed the crowd with fresh disdain. A rash of indistinguishable dirty faces looked back at her.
"They hate us,"
said one of the squad, wisely using the vox to express his concerns.
"They're just afraid, Lennox,"
Renski replied openly. The gunship's hold had been stripped almost bare. Only what was bolted to the hull remained, and even that showed evidence of attempted removal by force. Mercifully, the two heavy bolters mounted to the side doors remained intact. Upon entering the gloomy hold, where smoke still hung in the air, Renski instantly noticed the medipack, toolkit, and emergency rations were gone. So too a barrel of steel cable, its concomitant hand winch and entire lockbox of photon flares. All was standard issue. She checked the armory. The wall-mounted case had been severely tampered with but not breached. She allowed herself a small sigh of relief.
"Well, at least they didn't get any weapons or ammunition," remarked Lennox.
"They shot a Valk from the sky, Lennox, with a rocket tube. At least they didn't get any more weapons."
"Who are they, Proctor?"
asked Hegg, an old veteran who had served the Lex most of his adult life. Renski trusted his instincts.
"You tell me, Hegg," she said.
The three of them carefully working their way through the troop hold to the cockpit. The rest of the squad had formed a perimeter outside. They were disciplined enough not to chatter and stayed vigilant.
"Not opportunists, I'd say,"
answered Hegg.
"Takes planning to do something like this. Training, too. And the weapons. Not easy to take out a gunship like that. Need to know where to hit for a start. That takes precision."
He had looked down at the damage to the gunship, rubbing his salt-and-pepper stubble, but now turned his gaze back to Renski.
"You served with the Reeves, didn't you, Proctor?"
Renski nodded.
"Then you'll have seen what they've been chasing. The rumours."
She had. The cults, the ritual murders. Renski didn't like to think of them as sacrifices. The fear was bad enough without fueling it with superstition and stories about monsters.
"What was it they heard?"
she asked.
"Something about his dark cults arising."
"I heard a name too," said Lennox. "Heard it a lot recently. Lupercal."
Lupercal. The name of Horus. Lennox looked pale in the low light of the stab lumens. Renski had to admit even she felt colder, though she couldn't attribute it to anything as mundane as the dropping temperature. Night was coming, and in more ways than the literal sense.
"Let's get moving, shall we?"
she said, and headed for the cockpit. The door had been breached, and Renski felt a sick sensation in her stomach as she considered that Nada and his navigator, Uli, might have been taken. She gave a sigh of relief when she saw them still strapped into their flight seats. Even from behind, as she forced her way into the shattered cockpit, she could tell they were both dead. It wasn't until she made it around to the front that she saw being taken by the mob would have been mercy. Nada and Uli had been cut. Not from the glacis at the front of the gunship. That had weathered the impact, cracked but holding. Someone had come in with a knife and cut them. It hadn't been to kill them. The blood was so minimal they must have died on impact. Nada had a head wound. Uli had been impaled by a piece of fuselage bent in from the crumpled nose cone. Symbols had been carved into their bodies. She had seen one of them before, a wheel with 8 points. Something felt wrong about the air. It was too heavy and thick, as if the gravity had suddenly increased. Lennox scurried from the cockpit. Bending double, he vomited in the troop hold. Even Hegg was breathing hard, unable to take his eyes off Nada's mutilated body.
"What if they did this?"
he mumbled.
"It means the perpetrators are close, and any number of people in that crowd outside could have seen them."
Renski raised the other proctors on the Vox. Situation reports filtered in slowly. No meaningful progress. A few dangerous stills had been shut down. Obscura peddlers rousted and shackled. Tents kicked in. No sign of a rocket tube. No sign of any insurgents. The so-called dark cults.
"Can you feel it, Hig?"
said Renski, getting them both out of the cockpit.
"Proctor,
this place, it's about to explode."
The dry earth trembled, unnoticed by the crowds. They were too intent on the enforcers in their midst, or the trades they were making, or the hooded figures who moved amongst them. In sight of the wall, but hidden by the masses, something stirred beneath the wastes. Once they were back outside the crashed gunship, Renski got in touch with Getter.
"Warden Primus, we found something at the crash site."
As she talked, Renski surveyed the immediate crowd. One woman caught her eye, stern-faced, cold. Something about her didn't feel right, and Renski had learned long ago to trust such instincts. From her time in the Reeves, she had learned something of human behaviour, of the pathological desire in some perpetrators to linger by the scenes of their crimes, driven by a sadistic urge to see the aftermath. She motioned to Lennox to investigate.
"Have you apprehended the bombers, Proctor Renski?"
Getter sounded nervous, and Renski craned her neck to try to get a look at him on the wall, but couldn't find him. She saw the guns well enough, aimed at the crowd, at her and her men.
"Not yet, Warden Primus."
"Then get to it, Renski. The wall isn't safe until you've rooted out these saboteurs."
Renski bit her tongue, deciding against telling her superior how ridiculous and paranoid his request actually was. They had drawn what evidence they could from the wreck, some of it extremely disturbing. That would have to suffice for now. She told Getter what they had found, and the Warden Primus fell silent for a long moment.
"Warden Primus?"
she asked after deeming the pause long enough.
"I don't like this, Proctor. I'm recalling you and your men. Expect immediate extraction."
"Sir, we have only been out here a short time. A larger sweep might reveal..."
"I have made my decision, Proctor. Prepare your squads. You're coming back to the wall."
Lennox had reached the woman Renski had identified and started questioning her. Another man had come to remonstrate with him, the woman's husband, perhaps, or simply an agitated onlooker.
"Yes, Warden Primus,"
said Renski, wondering whether Getter was concerned about her well-being, or if he actually just wanted more troops on the wall. She was about to go over to Lennox when she felt a gentle tug on her arm and looked down to see a little boy, no older than 6, she guessed. Renski waved away 2 of her squad who had been about to intercede and crouched down to the boy's eye level.
"Are you lost, child? Is she your mother?"
She gestured to the woman. An argument had developed, drawing in 3 other enforcers. Hegg was nearby, already on the Vox, calling it in with the other squads in case they needed reinforcement. Rensky was rising again, keen to quell any disquiet and avoid anything worse than an altercation, when the boy grabbed at her wrist. She glanced down, her attention still half on the increasingly volatile exchange between Lennox and the woman. Other parties had begun to get involved. She needed to shut this down fast. The boy blinked, his face as cold and pale as alabaster, and the same disquiet she had felt in the Valkyrie came back.
Lupercal,
he said, in a way no child should be able to. Rensky frowned, fear clenching her gut as if she were back in the grazing pen with the Slythig.
What?
The woman stopped arguing. She just stopped.
Lupercal,
she said. Then another, just a voice hidden amongst the crowd.
Lupercal!
A vendor set down the vermin he had been roasting on a spit.
Lupercal!
A scavenger, sifting through his loot, let the sack slip from his grasp and his treasure tumble free.
Lupercal!
A hooded figure emerged from the ground. Several hooded figures. They were armed.
Gun!
Shouted Rensky. And then the shooting started. From the wall, Geta saw the muzzle flashes, angry starbursts made brighter by the onset of night. Fear had him. Of the unknown, of the night, of Horus. He heard them chanting the War Master's name, his followers, on terror, here, at Plaintiff's Reach. He didn't even try to reach Rensky on the Vox. He just gave the order to open fire. Rensky tried to keep her head as she fired her sidearm. She had lost sight of the boy. He'd let her go as soon as the gun battle began. Lennox was dead, shot through the throat at close range. Hegg had a leg wound, but had managed to limp into the cover of an upturned vendor's cart. Solid slugs ricocheted off the crude metal sidings. Two other enforcers were screaming as the crowd overwhelmed and crushed them. She tried but couldn't reach Brank or any of the other proctors.
To the wall! To the wall!
She cried, knowing the sentries on the battlements would start shooting soon. She got off a shot with her sidearm. In the darkness, she thought she saw one of the hooded gunmen go down. Cultists, she realized. A few had shed their cloaks, revealing the sigil she had seen on Narda and Uli carved into their own flesh. It was sickening. Someone stepped in Rensky's way, a large man. He had a piece of metal pipe in his hand and looked as if he wanted to knock her teeth out with it. Cultist or not, she felled him with a single blow of her shock maul and didn't wait to see the man jerk in nerve-shredding agony.
Move! Move!
She urged her men. The other intercession squads were coming in too.
We need immediate support and extraction,
Rensky shouted down the Vox.
Get the Vox in the air and open up the damn gate!
Sporadic gunfire lit up the shadows and threw scared and angry faces into sharp relief. The crowd panicked, and they swept towards the wall. Rensky and about 30 enforcers were just ahead of them. The rest fought running battles through the makeshift streets of the shantytown that had risen up outside Plaintiff's Reach. Lasfire stabbed down from above like hot, deadly rain. In the distance, a man's head broke apart as the sniper towers went to work. A rocket tube fizzed out of the darkness on the wasteland side of the wall. One of the watchtowers exploded. Rubble and several bodies fell forwards from the wall to the screams of the onlookers caught in the middle.
Get her! What are you doing? Get her!
Rensky screamed down the Vox, frantically urging on the remaining enforcers. They had to get to the wall. Get her had to open the gate or they'd be dead. No room for the Valkyries now. One hove in anyway, coming up over the wall like a bird of prey. Its side doors rolled open and two heavy bolters started up. The firing was indiscriminate. Bodies were churned to red mist, mostly cultists who had amassed in force, but not all.
Bloody throne, Geta! Ceasefire, dammit!
Geta must have lost all capacity to think, to reason. All that remained was fear and the instinctive reaction to it, fight or flight. It seemed Geta had chosen the former. Rensky took a glancing hit to the shoulder and cried out. She stumbled, but found Hegg beneath her, and the two struggled on together, their enforcer brethren around them. Maybe 80 men were left out of over 200 that Rensky could see. She led them to the wall. They were perhaps 50 paces out, Rensky screaming at Geta to open the gate and let them in, when the Valkyrie came down. She didn't see what disabled it. It looked like a haywire grenade, judging by the call of electrical interference wreathing the hull. The gunship came down hard, nosediving right into the wall. It was maybe 10 meters away from Rensky when it hit. An explosion followed, then another, but not from a rocket tube detonation. In the sudden flare of light, Rensky saw the wall tremble. One of the outer armor plates that ran between each buttress buckled and split. Its absence revealed a crack. Geta lost his footing as the wall shook, and he struck his head against the battlement. Groggily, he heard Rensky's impassioned pleas across the vox for the first time. Blood leaked down his face. He tried to stand, but the wall shuddered. He thought it was the head wound, and then he noticed the men on his section were unsteady, too. Something was happening. He heard the break in the wall as much as he felt it. Then he saw disaster unfolding, and the poor souls about to be caught up in it.
Rensky!
Skidding to a halt, Rensky watched as a huge piece of the border wall sheared off and fell towards her. She held tight to Heg's hand, knowing there was no escape. Photon flares lit the night, released by her comrades in desperation. A false sunrise flickered, ephemeral and actinic, before the shadow of the wall swallowed it. No rescue would come for them. Their rescuers were on the wall, and falling with it. Geta was falling with it.
Throne of Terror,
Rensky murmured, wishing for a god to pray to. Behind her, she heard an eruption of earth, as if something huge had just clawed its way out of the grave. She would have turned, but the wall was all she could see, falling inexorably, those caught in its shadows screaming. Heg had closed his eyes, teeth clenched against the inevitable outcome. Rensky forced hers open, so she saw something of the giant that rushed to interpose itself between the proctor and death by pulverization. What she saw next defied understanding. She thought the wall had stopped in midair, held by some force field. Then she saw the giant underneath it and realized he had caught it. He wielded a colossal hammer and had braced the wall against its shaft. The Primarchs were known to Rensky. Every citizen on Terra had seen their statues or heard of their legends. She had never borne witness to one in the flesh, especially up close. Even the Imperial Fists, merely the scions of such a being, were rarely seen outside the palace confines. The Primarch in their midst looked immense. His scalloped armor had seen war, she could tell, even in the darkness, and his skin shone like polished onyx. His eyes glared fiery red with the effort of his feet. For the briefest moment they met with Rensky's, and she felt a strange empathy with this godlike figure. He bore a huge slab of the wall, alone. Then she saw the cultists who had also fallen in the wall's shadow begin to gather their wits. They picked up blades and guns, intent on the Primarch, some atavistic urge overcoming their awe of him.
Lupercal!
One of them roared, a woman who looked like a medike. Rensky reacted on instinct. Questions could wait. Realization of what was actually happening could wait, if she survived.
Protect him!
She shouted. Heg and the other enforcers were on their feet, reaching for combat shotguns and shock mauls, whatever they had left. They need not have bothered. Three legionaries came out of the darkness to cut the cultists down. More than 20 fell in seconds, dispatched with grim lethality. A stub pistol went off, but the bullet ricocheted off battle-worn warplate. The legionaries moved through the rebel throng with a ferocity of purpose that Rensky found at once terrifying and invigorating. 50, 60 cultists died before the rest broke. They scattered, harried by enforcers who had watched it all unfold. It was all over in seconds. The rest of the cultists either put to flight or left to be rounded up later by what remained of the intercession squads. Rensky stared, awed and afraid, until one of the legionaries approached her. He was also massive, though not as large as his Primarch, his armour of a draconic design. A cloak of scales that glistened in the light of stab lumens was draped across his shoulders. It looked ragged but sturdy. Savagery bled off him. Even his war helm snarled. He carried a large hammer in one hand, energy crackling about its head. Perhaps seeing the fear in her eyes, he reached up and removed his helm. A face as black as soot greeted her, those same embers burning in his eyes as his Primarch. A salamander, Rensky realized. She had been taught never to take off her helm in an active war zone, but was not about to gainsay the warrior.
"You, there,"
he said, clamping his fearsome helmet to his belt, where it attached firmly, magnetically. The eyes blazed, but were not without compassion. She had never known space marines could feel such emotions.
Get these people clear. My brothers and I will deal with the vermin.
And then he was gone again, replacing his helm and wading off into the shadows. Renski didn't hesitate further. She and the men she had managed to gather together drove back the crowds, using the loud hailers to get their attention. She tried not to think about the wall, waiting to descend and crush her, or the Goliath who held it upon his shoulders like some figure of myth. Those who saw him were aghast, but they realized the danger too and fell back. With the cultists dead or fleeing, some semblance of order returned, helped in part by the enforcers already amongst the crowds, and beginning to marshal them in the absence of the immediate crisis. As soon as the masses were clear, Renski gave a signal across the loudhailer. The Primarch, his face strained, fed a burst of power into his hammer, and the wall shattered around him. Again, Renski found herself agog to witness such magnificent technology. And there he stood, surrounded by debris, weary but still strong enough to favour Renski with an appreciative nod.
"Vulcan," she whispered,
able to remember the Primarch's name now the threat of imminent death had passed. She managed to nod back, but that was all. His sons went to him at once, and she saw the mythic warriors and their father exchange words in a strange dialect. Renski found it odd to witness their obvious closeness. She had never seen space marines like this before, almost at rest, at peace. Their easy familiarity spoke of many shared experiences. That and their battered armour suggested they had been on a long journey. It had somehow brought them to the old earth of Terra. Then she remembered the crowd. They had been awestruck by the godlike figure in their midst, but now that awe was fading, they began to clamour for the wall again. A ragged breach yawned in the barrier between the wastes and the outer precincts of Plaintiff's Reach. From there, another wall, and then the petitioner's city. Urgency seized the masses, fueled by fear and a potent survival instinct. Vulcan's sons surrounded him, but the crowd just flowed around them. Even with a Primarch and three of his legionaries at her side, Renski and her enforcers could not hope to stem the tide. The wall would be overrun. She saw several of her comrades entangled in the fallen debris. One of the bodies was Geta's, and she felt a great swell of pity that this should be his end after so many long years of service. Her immediate concerns arrested her attention. She turned back towards the crowds, drawing her shock maul as the stampede began, determined to try to slow the horde.
"Halt!"
she cried, her vox slave to the loudhailers, her voice booming across Plaintiff's Reach.
"Cease and come to order!"
The crowd stopped, and Renski had to check herself.
"I really didn't think that would work,"
she muttered, baffled. A deeply resonant voice answered,
"As powerful as your oratory is," declared Vulcan, gesturing towards the breach. "I think they are the reason for the waning tide."
Renski turned and beheld a phalanx of shimmering golden yellow standing in front of the breach. They had come at last. Not in answer to Geta's summons. They had come for him. The Imperial Fists. Zaitos bristled when he saw Dawn's own.
"Why do they aim their weapons at us?"
asked Gargo.
"It's not us, brother,"
Zaitos replied, but refrained from responding in kind. Nothing would be gained here from rashness. His gaze on the wall of breacher shields suddenly before him, Vulcan stepped out from amongst the drakes.
"Be calm, my sons. We are not expected or wanted, and come at a dark hour."
"All the more reason to rejoice at your return, my lord,"
said Gargo.
"They do not believe it is him," said Abedemi.
Vulcan did not answer. Instead, he approached the Imperial Fist's leader. A black skull adorned the warrior's breastplate, laurel wreathed in emerald. Silver lightning crossed his shoulder guards beneath a clenched fist of jet, and a black cloak trimmed with ice lion fur hung on his back. A Huskarl, one of Dawn's fiercest protectors. His red retinal lenses glinted as they regarded the Lord of Drakes. The crowd fell to silence, the sight of 40 bolters wielded by Dawn's own Praetorians enough to quell any riotous urges.
"Do you speak for Dawn
and for these men? Vulcan asked of the warrior. He was the only legionary in golden yellow not to have raised his weapon. He had a hand on the hilt of a ceremonial sea axe blade, sheathed at his hip, the other within quick reach of a bolt pistol on the opposite side. Vulcan did not have the heart or pride to tell him that however fast he was able to draw them, it would still have been too slow. His brothers, on the other hand, Vulcan did not doubt his ability to survive 40 bolter salvos, but he could not say the same for his sons.
Answer me, legionary. I know my brother would have instilled respect in you, or do you believe me a dead man, an apparition, or a false face?
I do not know what to believe, the warrior answered at last, gruff in the manner traditional of the Seventh. Dawn's sons were as rigid and inflexible as the walls they stood sentry on. Vulcan applauded their dependability, where others might disparage it as lacking in imagination.
Have you not heard?
Said the Primarch, his smile genuine but hinting at the pain of regret.
Vulcan lives.
The warrior did not respond. He maintained his watch, as did his men. Every one of them had his weapon trained on Vulcan. No thought spared for the crowd. They posed no threat, of course. None would dare approach the League of Golden Yellow surrounding the breach.
I have a great desire to speak to your father, Vulcan told him. I assume he sent you. I imagine he is watching even now. Rogel will know. He will see me and he will know. We are kin. So while we wait for my brother, perhaps you would remove your helm and we can at least meet eye to eye as warriors. And I would have your name, unless I am to address you as legionary.
A moment's pause suggested reluctance on the warrior's part, but he spoke eventually.
I am Arcamus.
Vulcan smiled, though his eyes were suddenly intent on the legionary.
Then let us greet each other as sword brothers, for we fought together during the Great Crusade.
The warrior, who had identified himself as Arcamus, reached up and removed his helm with a hiss of pneumatic locks disengaging from their seals. A young but proud warrior regarded Vulcan. Despite his youth, he had begun to bear the lines in his face that spoke of eternal vigilance. Vulcan frowned.
You are not he said. You are not Arcamus.
The warrior took on a solemn expression.
I bear his name, in both honour and memoriam.
At this, Vulcan nodded, understanding.
Then I grieve for his passing, as I do all noble sons and brothers fallen in this war.
Arcamus did not respond immediately, though the hardness of his eyes suggested agreement. He said,
If you are the Lord of Drakes, how did you survive? How did you reach Terra?
There is a long answer to that question, but I shall simply say it was by my father's will and the courage of my sons.
Arcamus looked like he was about to say more when he received a message in the Voxbead in his ear. He listened, and Vulcan waited, though the message was terse, as Arcamus turned a moment later to his men and gave a signal.
Only you, my lord,
said Arcamus, and put his helmet back on. Zaitos was about to protest, but Vulcan calmed him with a gesture as he rejoined his sons for a brief moment.
I do not like this, father, said Zaitos,
a wary eye on the imperial fists, who moved in perfect lockstep, the parting of their ranks like a drawbridge, revealing a safe passage into an unknown keep.
Nor I, said Abidemi. We have come this far together.
Vulcan put his hands on the shoulder of both his sons and nodded to Gargo. What the Primarch said next was meant for all of them.
You have served beyond duty. You brought me back from the dead. There is no greater honor you could have shown me, and I shall be forever indebted to you, my Draxwood, my sons. But I must go the rest of the way alone. Stay here.
He gestured to a female enforcer who watched enrapt, and the great swathe of humanity that had been her charge.
Vouchsafe these people. Lend them your courage. Lend them your example. They have had enough of fear. Inspire them, as you have inspired me.
The three bowed as one, each sinking to a knee. Tears streamed freely down Gargo's face, prompting a fierce salute from Zaitos.
You have our oath, Primarch.
Vulcan did not look back. He heard Abademi's singing, a lament of old Nocturne, but one that spoke of glory and honour undying. Vulcan smiled sadly as he made for the breach, a phalanx of golden yellow closing up behind him to seal the way, and a Huskarl with the name of Arcamus watching him go as he listened to the voice in his ear. A female voice came through the Voxspeed in his ear.
Is it him?
Dawn will know,
Arcamus replied, standing with his warriors as he watched Vulcan depart alone.
But is it him?
What is your assessment?
Dawn will adjudge that.
Indeed. But is it him?
Arcamus sighed, but chose to relent.
Oh, it feels right.
Instinct alone should not be trusted, you know that.
Sometimes that is all we have to avail ourselves of.
There was a pause as the person on the end of the Vox feed considered the import of that statement.
And the others? Is it them?
It could be.
It is, as I said. We cannot assume all of the assets were activated.
No, Andromeda,
said Arcamus, his eyes turning to the crowds waiting beyond the breach.
We cannot.